I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
It's taking aim at money Planned Parenthood receives through Medicaid,
defunding Planned Parenthood and boosting a child tax credit. We dive into the budget reconciliation bill.
And this, again, is why we as Catholics need to step into foster care.
During National Foster Care Awareness Month, we speak with a ministry that hopes to raise up more Catholic couples who will open their homes and hearts to foster children. And we speak to a beauty queen who advocates for life on and off the stage.
I think the Senate is going to get there. I hope they're going to get there. I think they're going to have changes.
U.S. senators are combing over the budget reconciliation bill after it passed the House last Thursday in a razor-thin 215 to 214 vote. The sweeping multi-trillion dollar bill advances the Trump administration's agenda on taxes, immigration, energy, and defense. It is receiving praise and criticism, mostly along party lines. Pro-life leaders are praising the so-called Big Beautiful Bill for blocking federal funding from Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood receives one-third of its funding, more than $700 million a year, from the federal government. Planned Parenthood is also a major provider of hormones for so-called transgender transitions in the country. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was asked about defunding Planned Parenthood late last week.
The president has maintained a very clear commitment to ensuring that this administration and the American people's tax dollars are not funding any institution. That includes hospital systems that are funding the chemical castration and mutilation of children. We're not going to tolerate taxpayer dollars going to such efforts.
The budget bill does face more of an uphill battle in the Senate, as several Republican senators have criticized the bill's impact on the deficit. Leah Labresco Sargent, a policy analyst of the Niskanen Center, joins us now to give us her take on the pros and cons of this bill related to the preborn. Leah, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So how exactly does this budget reconciliation bill defund Planned Parenthood?
So it's taking aim at money Planned Parenthood receives through Medicaid. Now, Planned Parenthood isn't supposed to and doesn't really receive Medicaid funding for abortion, but it can receive Medicaid funding for patients who are seeking help with contraceptives, STI screening, etc. And this bill is making Planned Parenthood ineligible to provide those services to Medicaid patients with the goal of sending them elsewhere. And the interesting thing about how it's scored when you look at the impact on the deficits is this is scored as a deficit increasing measure because the assumption is defunding Planned Parenthood will result in more babies being born, which adds to the deficit if that were the only way you cared about babies, because babies require more services as they grow.
Makes sense. The bill does contain some family policy measures. It boosts the child tax credit to a maximum of $2,500. Can you talk about the child tax credit that's being proposed?
I think there's a lot to be excited about on the front of the child tax credit. And I think the most important thing to remember is raising the child tax credit to $2,500 isn't exactly an increase for parents. It's a catch-up. When President Trump passed his first tax reform bill in his first term, he raised the child tax credit to $2,000, and if it had kept pace with inflation, parents would already be receiving $2,500. So the House has finally brought parents back to par. This is essential because if the big, beautiful bill doesn't pass or some form of it doesn't pass, the president's tax bill from previously expires, parents might be the only people who are better off under expiration than other folks, because the child tax credit has lost so much of its value to inflation. So bringing it back up to $2,500, possibly as it goes through the Senate, increasing refundability, that's a big win for parents and putting them back where they ought to be.
And as the bill comes together, there have been some new ideas about how to support families. First, a Trump account that is a new savings account, which includes a one-time deposit of $1,000 from the federal government, and which parents can contribute to as well. Mm-hmm. Then a baby bonus, where parents can receive a payment right after a baby is born. Can you break these down for us? And what do you expect will be in the final bill?
Absolutely. So the Trump accounts are currently in the bill that passed the House. The baby bonus is a possibility that could join the bill in the Senate. And you can think of these as two ways of supporting families that are aimed at very different points in a child's life. The Trump account isn't so different from a 529. It's a tax advantage savings account that you can only use for specific things. You know, a 529, as most parents know, that's for school. This you can use for school or for buying a house or for a couple other limited purposes. But a Trump account is essentially the government helping parents a little to save money to launch their children as adults. And if you're not using the money for one of those specified purposes, you can't touch all of it until you're 30. So this is a later in life bonus. A baby bonus is money that goes to parents right after a baby is born. And it's aimed to kind of smooth the big income shock that parents go through when they have a baby. And that's not just because their expenses are rising. Most parents see that their income drops by about 10% in that first year. And it makes it hard to take the leap of having the child you want to have but feel you have to keep saving up for, or to say yes to the child you've already conceived but are nervous about going forward with. So a baby bonus is meant to help in that first year, to help parents take leave, to afford the essentials, to make one more right choice for their child. In a white paper, I propose a $2,000 baby bonus available to pretty much every family who has a baby. So that's aimed at helping parents right when a baby comes along. The Trump savings account is aimed at helping parents when their kid is 18, 25, or 30 to kind of launch their adult life.
Leah, you mentioned, and we reported earlier, how it might have trouble passing in the Senate because of this fear of increasing the deficit.
Yes.
Can you speak to some of the greater goods that would come out of that initial investment in our communities?
You know, I think the important thing to think about here is we are tight on money. You know, I don't want us to spend money like there's no tomorrow. We need to really think for every provision in here, how is it furthering growth and stabilizing families? And there's some stuff I would strip out already, you know, and we'll see how the Senate takes a look at some of the different provisions. But when you look at family provisions, that's government supporting the most basic functions of human life. You know, this isn't the back and forth about should there be a tanning excise tax or not. A child tax credit is meant to support families in welcoming a child. And we do this not just as a handout to families. We do this as basic fairness. The origins of the child tax credit aren't even a pronatalist policy. Mm. It's just realism that when you think about how much money is available to be taxed in different households at the same amount of earnings, a family with children has less disposable income because more of it belongs to the child to care for them. We don't treat that as a consumption choice like buying a yacht. That's nurturing human life, and our tax code takes account of it accordingly.
Well, Leah, thank you so much for being with us and for helping clarify these issues.
It's my pleasure.
Planned Parenthood has announced that more clinics will be closing their doors this year. They are blaming a freeze on federal funds. Four of six facilities in Iowa will be closing. Four other Planned Parenthoods will shut down in Minnesota. This comes after announcements of clinics shutting down in Michigan, Colorado, and Utah. Catholic Relief Services will lose federal funding for 11 of 13 international food programs under changes by the Trump administration on foreign aid. The funds support international school feeding and maternal and child nutrition projects. CRS says losing this money will affect more than 780,000 school-aged children in 11 countries. The president and CEO of CRS said in a statement, quote, "This decision isn't just a policy shift. It's a life-altering blow to hundreds of thousands of children who rely on these meals to stay healthy, stay in school, and stay hopeful about their future," end quote. Funding will end this July. The White House says that President Trump is reviewing an in vitro fertilization policy that aims to expand access to the procedure in February. The president signed an executive order asking for ways to protect access to IVF and aggressively lower out-of-pocket and health plan costs for the treatment. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states that IVF is morally unacceptable, as it separates the Marriage Act from procreation and because it treats the child as a commodity. A Texas bill aimed to stop the flow of abortion pills in the state has failed to advance. State senators passed SB 2880, which would have allowed anyone who manufactures, distributes, mails, prescribes, or provides abortion-inducing drugs to be sued for up to $100,000. Tuesday was the deadline for Senate bills to receive a vote in the House, and the bill was not scheduled. The bill's omission means it will not make it to the governor's desk before the legislative session ends this week. After a decade-long push, physician-assisted suicide will become available in Delaware. On May 22nd, Governor Matt Mayer signed a bill legalizing the deadly procedure for terminally ill adults with 6 months or less to live. This comes after the bill narrowly passed the House and Senate on April 17th. Diocese of Wilmington Bishop William Coing has been urging residents of Delaware to oppose the measure, saying in April, quote, "There is a great distinction between, on the one hand, death that comes naturally, and on the other hand, performing actions to bring on death." The bill goes into effect on January 1, 2026. Delaware is now one of 11 states to legalize euthanasia in the U.S. France's lower house of parliament, the National Assembly, voted in favor of a medical assisted suicide bill on Tuesday. The bill would allow French citizens who are 18 years or older with incurable illness to take lethal drugs to end their lives. A team of medical professionals would need to confirm that the person is in a terminal stage of illness and suffering from intolerable and untreatable pain. The bill now goes to the Senate for further debate. As Pope Leo XIV began his papacy, the Vatican launched a global charter to support the protection of the elderly and preserve their dignity. It came after multiple organizations, doctors, scientists, and academics came together for a symposium to discuss the challenges facing older populations. The Pontifical Academy for Life, the Muslim Council of Elders, and the American Association of Retired Persons, or AARP, signed a pledge committing to establish global aging initiatives. Those initiatives include empowering older adults, affirming their right to independence, and protecting them from all forms of discrimination, abuse, exploitation, and neglect. Sister Constance Viet of the Little Sisters of the Poor, a ministry dedicated to the care of the elderly persons in need, says age inclusion is needed now more than ever.
It's very important that there be a universal recognition of the dignity of older people, of their place in society and their value in society. This is a document on an international level that will perhaps be addressed by governments and international bodies, but all of us on our local and family level can do the same, you know, to make sure that older people are included and respected and appreciated.
Pope Leo XIV has appointed Monsignor Renzo Pecoraro as the next president of the Pontifical Academy for Life, the Vatican's think tank on bioethics and pro-life issues. The 65-year-old Italian-born priest has served as the Academy's chancellor since September 2011. Monsignor Pecoraro is an expert in medicine and bioethics. He succeeds the 80-year-old Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, whose tenure was marked by controversial statements on assisted suicide and contraception. Catholics from all around the world will gather at the Vatican from May 30th to June 1st to celebrate the Jubilee of families, children, grandparents, and the elderly. The celebration recognizes the importance of the family unit, acknowledges the unique role children and grandparents play in a family, and honors the elderly members of their communities. Those participating will have the opportunity to join a seminar on the pastoral care of children, a catechesis on the value of old age, partake in prayer vigils, and enjoy entertainment in various Roman piazzas. The Jubilee celebration will conclude with Mass offered by Pope Leo XIV in St. Peter's Square. The month of May is not only dedicated to our Blessed Mother, but it is also Foster Care Awareness Month. According to U.S. government statistics, there are more than 365,000 children in foster care in America any given day. Ages range from less than a year old to up to 20. Most of them had to enter the foster care system due to parental neglect or drug abuse. There are some startling statistics related to children in foster care, according to springsoflove.com, a Catholic organization that supports couples who foster. They say that 70% of human trafficking victims in the U.S. spent time in foster care. In several states, 65% of inmates aged out of foster care. Springs of Love also says that 71% of young women become pregnant within 1 year of aging out of foster care, and many 18 to 24-year-olds who were in foster care experience homelessness. I spoke with Kimberly Henkel, a foster and adoptive mother who launched Springs of Love, a ministry that helps other Catholic couples navigate through the foster care process and bring love into the lives of these children. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us. Why is it the case that our current foster system leads to such devastating circumstances, including human trafficking, unplanned pregnancies, and homelessness?
Well, yes, foster care is very cyclical, and many people are not aware of that. And so frequently there will be somebody who is in foster care, they age out, or maybe, you know, they never actually had any family stability in their life. So then they end up addicted, homeless, all of those issues. And then they give birth to a child who is then taken from them. And this is how it is. It's extremely cyclical. And so it's so difficult to break out of that. And we are just trying to bring awareness to this issue because many Catholics have no idea. They have no idea that there is this huge crisis in our country with almost 400,000 children in foster care.
And can you tell us a little bit more about your organization, just what you guys do and the needs you see to address?
Sure. So first of all, you know, I had co-founded a ministry called Springs in the Desert, which is really to accompany couples struggling with infertility. And then as my husband and I, our journey, as we continued down the path, we started fostering and adopting, we just saw this need. So we started a sister ministry called Springs of Love. And we are trying to, number one, raise awareness. Because like I said, so many Catholics have no idea. And so we're raising awareness. We're going into parishes. We have a video series that's actually on EWTN On Demand. And it's on our website as well, springsoflove.org. And we are telling these stories of families who are fostering and what it's like, and what it's like to actually help work side by side with a family in crisis who has lost their children to foster care, and then being a support to that family. So because the goal of foster care is reunification. Mm-hmm. So if it is safe for a child to go back home, then we want to continue being a support to that family. And this is how we can see huge change, right? Because, you know, when we're dealing with these massive issues of homelessness and poverty and, you know, addictions and trafficking, and like I said, they're so cyclical. In order for people to break out of that, they need to know the love of Jesus. They need to have people to come alongside them and accompany them.
May is National Foster Care Month. Can you share a little bit more details on your Love Makes a Difference Parish Toolkit?
Yes, we really are trying to enable parishes to do these things on their own, to be able to put on awareness events. So we have this toolkit on our website, springsoflove.org. You just go there and you can download the toolkit, which has bulletin announcements. It has a video. It's actually a compilation of three of our videos that we've already done. So it has two foster families and then a young lady who aged out of foster care, and she's sharing her perspective, which is so important for us to hear, you know, because she was older and she was just bounced from home to home to home, went to 12 different foster homes. Can you even imagine what that would be like? And then aged out. And a lot of times when these kids are aging out, there's 20,000 aging out each year. They have no connections. They have nobody to look after them. And these are the ones who are becoming pregnant. 70% of these young ladies are getting pregnant within the first couple of years to go on and repeat the cycle. So many of them, these are the women who are having abortions. And this, again, is why we as Catholics need to step into foster care. We need to be the ones who are bringing these children into our home, who are loving these children, you know, showing them that the love of Jesus and that their lives can be completely transformed.
Now, Kimberly, fostering and adoption touches on heavy crosses that are difficult to bear, such as complex family structures, grief, and at times there are sometimes questions of violence, sexual abuse, or addiction. How is the church uniquely positioned to speak to these wounds and hardships?
Yeah, absolutely. We have Jesus, right? We have the answer. We have the healer, the divine physician who can heal all of our wounds. You know, we are putting together a curriculum right now for foster and adoptive parents, and it will be available later this summer. And this curriculum addresses all of these issues because I think, you know, as a pro-life, you know, people, sometimes we can focus on the joy of adoption, but we don't want to look at sort of the harder aspects of it. And so we're really going in and trying to educate people about, you know, what does it look like, the grief and the loss and, you know, the difficulties. But, you know, I'm doing it through the light of the gospel just to give people that hope that Christ really can truly come into our hearts and bring that healing that we need. He wants them to be healed. And he wants us to not turn away. He wants us as Catholics to be the hands and feet of Christ, to bring these children into our home, to love them, to, you know, relational wounds are healed in relationship. We can help these children to heal by loving them. So we like to say everyone can do something. So if you're not called to foster, you can support a foster family. And half of foster families quit after the first year because it is hard. It is hard. But the statistics show that 90% will continue fostering if they are supported. And so this is what we're trying to do in the parishes, in our Catholic parishes, is to start these Springs of Love chapters that will have care teams to support these foster families.
Kimberly, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
To learn more, visit springsoflove.org. And to listen to the stories of foster families working with Springs of Love, head over to EWTN On Demand. Coming up, a witness to life in two of the most pro-abortion states in the U.S.
God, what do I say? And then the answer came to me.
How one beauty queen educated a crowd about the pro-life resources available to a woman facing an unexpected pregnancy. And hundreds of pro-lifers march in the streets in a state with no limits on abortion. On Saturday, May 17th, hundreds of pro-life advocates from across Oregon, including Portland Archbishop Alexander Sample, gathered outside the state capitol in Salem for the annual Oregon March for Life. This year's event featured a diaper drive where over 30,000 diapers were donated. Oregon legalized abortion in 1969. It is currently legal up until the moment of birth. Further south along the West Coast in the state of California, standing up for life is a challenge. The state has some of the most liberal abortion laws in the country. But one young woman has not let that deter her from bringing the pro-life message right to the stage. We introduce you to Cristabel Garcia, a beauty pageant participant who won the 2025 Miss Los Angeles People's Choice Award. Cristabel, you won the 2025 Miss Los Angeles People's Choice Award. Congratulations. Why did you decide to join this pageant?
I decided to join this pageant because I knew that God placed me in that purpose, in that room for a reason. I mean, if I didn't do that pageant, I wouldn't have been here right now at this very moment. And before I even applied to the pageant, I was just asking God, like, God, is this really what you want me to do? And he was like, yes, just apply. And once I applied, I had almost everything paid for. I had a lot of sponsors that paid for a lot of things. And what I did is that I wrote on my secondary community service initiative as a pro-life movement. And once I got to the interview, I was asked the question, what would you do in case your friend is experiencing an unexpected pregnancy? And I said, well, I'll lead her to the right resources, which is the pregnancy centers that offers maternity clothes, free ultrasounds, and many other resources to help women.
That's incredible. Now, were you expecting this question or did it catch you by surprise?
It caught me by surprise. I was behind the podium. They were asking me very, very hard questions. And then they asked me that question, what would you do in case your friend was experiencing an unexpected pregnancy? And I was just thinking, what would I do? I was like, God, what do I say? And then the answer came to me, and that's exactly what I said. I'll lead her to the right resources.
Wow. And how did they respond, like your interviewees, when you gave that answer?
They were, I felt a very like dark presence from them in a way, but I was being very respectful. They didn't really react as much. I know the interviewers have to do their best to not react because this is the Miss America pageant, and they have to do their best to not say as much or just stay neutral when they're asking these questions, or even with my own reaction or my own response, they have to stay as neutral as possible.
That makes sense. Now, to our knowledge, you are the first beauty pageant participant to publicly stand up for life. Is that a lonely position, or are there other women you've met in the pageants that feel the same?
Yes, I actually have met a teen contestant who is also pro-life. She actually recently told me once I posted the article on my Instagram, she says that I'm also very, very pro-life. And she's actually the teen winner for the Miss Los Angeles. And I really love her. I really respect her. I also respect for all the women that they do. They're very, very talented. But yeah, that one girl that I met, she's very, very pro-life.
Wow. And what would you say to a young woman or man who's interested in pursuing a career in the arts or entertainment, but is afraid to stand up for their convictions for fear of being blacklisted?
It's not to be afraid of anything. I'm very bold in what I do and what I say. I recently worked on a project called An Unplanned Milestone with Christian Allen. He had recently graduated from UCLA, and I was able to work with him on that project where it highlights a woman that's trying to balance her life while being a mom and also pursuing her acting degree. And what I do for everything that I do before I even do any competitions or any interviews, I pray and I ask God, if this is really what you want, then you will lead me to the right place and you will let me find peace and have me say the right answers.
And can you tell us a little bit about your pro-life work off the stage? How do you advocate for life?
Yes, actually this weekend, I believe, is when they're having a diaper drive here in La Mirada. So I'm hoping to participate with my friends while also balancing finals. But I do my best to try to attend as many events as possible in the local areas. I know at my college, we're still planning and trying to do a club by the fall of 2025. And that's for future plans for Cal Poly Pomona.
Well, it seems like you have a very bright future ahead. Cristabel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
On Monday, our nation honored our fallen heroes, those who have made the ultimate sacrifice while serving the United States of America. Before we leave you today, we want to take a moment to also pay tribute to their lives, their bravery, and their service. God bless you.